What the hell's a noodler?
What's a noodler?
Somebody who catches big flathead catfish with their bare hands.
Wow.
That's nuts.
So no equipment for you.
This seems like something that has been going on since before the invention of a fishing pole, right?
I would say that's a safe bet.
Yeah.
I've always heard the tale that noodlers tell one another. The legend goes that the Indians used to catch catfish with their hands under creek banks and things, and that's where this was first discovered. But, you know, I don't know about that. I learned it from a bunch of guys in Greenwood, Mississippi.
We could say a bunch of really hungry guys, basically. I need fish right now, and I don't care. I don't have my fishing pole or anything. I'm just going to grab a fish.
Yeah, I doubt that they had a nice fishing pole and a rod, you know, the rod, the reel, and they're like, you know, we should just do this with our hands.
It's just faster.
Right.
Well, it is at certain times of year more effective.
Like when?
In the summertime.
Are they slower?
June and July here in Kentucky. Your catfish spawn in the early summer when the water temperature gets a little above 80 degrees, and they're pretty hard to catch on a rod and reel at that time. And then beyond that, a flathead of the average size that we catch several times a day noodling is, you know, that's the fish of a lifetime for a lot of people on a rod and reel. You know, our average fish are probably 30 pounds. We catch 50 to 60 pounders every summer.
Wow.
And, you know, if your goal is to catch a really big flathead catfish, noodling, maybe, you know, maybe a trot liner could do better, but I don't know. It's pretty effective. So I've never been able to do as well rod and reel fishing as I do grabbing them with my hands.
And you eat what you catch, right?
No, they don't eat what they catch.
You don't eat it?
We eat some of them. Mostly we just go for the fun of it. We release probably 85% of the fish that we catch. Most of those fish are pretty good sized. And, you know, we hate to kill too many fish like that. But, you know, we'll clean a few every summer. It doesn't take many fish of that size to fill your freezer up either. So,
give me a course in noodling for dummies.
That'd be us.
Yeah. So let's just say me, you, and AJ are sitting around like, hey, let's go noodling. Tell us what we need to know to start noodling.
Well, the first thing you need to know is whether or not it's legal in the state where you're planning to fish. In a lot of places, it's against the law, or they just don't have a law that covers it because it is a little bit obscure in some parts of the world. But
all right, let's skip past that whole police thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's just say we're out in the middle of the woods.
It's legal.
Worried about the law.
Right.
Well, assuming that it is legal. So the first thing you want to do is, you know, the right time of year, obviously. I mentioned this is at its best when your big catfish are on the nest. And that's when the water temperature gets up above 80 degrees. You want to be sure you're in a waterway where flathead catfish live. And then you jump in. We find most of the holes with our feet. We usually use either just an old set of worn out tennis shoes or like some of the, you know, like some of the slip-on river socks that people use for wading around creeks and things.
Yeah.
Wading boots could work if you don't mind, you know, being seen in a set of trout wading boots while you're out trying to noodle catfish, but, just something that you can feel around under the water, with your feet, without, you know, scraping them up on rocks or whatever. When you find a hole with your feet,
what kind of a hole? How do you know it's a catfish hole?
Well, you don't. You don't really know until you reach inside to be sure that it's a catfish in there. But you're feeling for holes up under the bank of riverways.
Have you ever reached into a hole and found a surprise?
Not really. But I'll get to that here in just a second. A lot of the places that we check are like under old boat ramps, concrete flood walls, things like that. And so you'll find a washout underneath that with your feet. And we don't reach into anything that is not totally submerged. You know, your snakes, your turtles, your beavers, all the stuff that everybody's afraid of.
Yeah.
That stuff all has to breathe air. So if it's something that is really, really shallow and we can see an air pocket, or we even suspect there might be an air pocket, no, we just don't reach in there. That's how you're going to get bitten by a water moccasin.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, you know, most
have
of the
you ever been bitten by a water moccasin?
Not a water moccasin. So I have been snake bitten, not noodling. So.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. Different story.
But when you find a likely place, you take a deep breath, go underwater, reach inside, wiggle your fingers a little bit, and if you get them too close to a flathead catfish's face, he's going to bite your hand. And when he does, you grab him by the bottom jaw and wrestle him out and either get him to the bank or in the boat or just hold him up for a picture and let him go, whatever you decide to do with him at that point. But that's the general procedure.
But doesn't his teeth hurt?
Yeah. They, they kind of have sort of a sandpaper-like jaw. A flathead is not too bad. They don't have a lot of jaw pressure. They'll skin your arm up. It's kind of like a bad rug burn or a concrete burn. You can we usually wear like gardening gloves or fish cleaning gloves to cover our hands up. But they'll still, a big fish will, when they bite down, they're usually up on your forearm, even far enough on your arm as to get up around your elbow sometimes. So, as they're fighting and thrashing, they'll skin you up a little bit, but you're doing this for kind of a thrill. So that's part of the fun. If you get a hold of a big blue catfish, their teeth are a little bit bigger. They get a lot of jaw pressure, and they can cut you a little worse than a flathead.
There has to be other things to do for a thrill.
Yeah, really.
There in Kentucky.
Like, go see a movie.
Right, or ride a bull or something.
Yeah, go on a motorcycle, something.
Yeah.
I would argue that a lot of those things are probably more dangerous than noodling actually is. I've done a ton of these interviews and helped host TV shows and written magazine articles and all kinds of stuff about noodling. And, it's got this perception of being really scary. But we have taken, I don't know how many dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of people to do this over the past decade or 12 years or however long I've been
doing
it.
Did you take your wife pregnant noodling?
I did, yeah. Yeah, she goes... of all the noodling trips that we've taken over the years, she's only missed a handful of them. And she actually went with us 3 days before our son was born. And it was, I strenuously objected to it. I told her I didn't think it was a good idea. But we just kind of putted around in the boat and in some of the bays that we fished without ever getting up on plane. That was really my bigger concern. We didn't let her grab a fish that day or anything. Not that she would have tried. But she just wanted to be out there. She went with us and just kind of floated around on her back, and it was actually kind of nice. You know, she was in the final days of pregnancy and it was hot. So yeah, she just bobbed around and had a big old time. So,
if her water broke when she was in the water, you'd never know.
Right.
That'd be funny if your baby's arm reached out, grabbed a...
disnoodling itself, yeah.
Catfish,
yeah.
And your wife...
I'd have been pretty proud.
That's, wow, you're not even out of the room yet, and you're noodling. That's my boy.
Yep, you definitely have to get a photo of that one.
Yeah.
Are there, like, noodling, like, festivals where, like, a bunch of people get together and all noodle together?
There's the Okie Noodling Festival in Oklahoma. Usually takes place around July. I think some documentaries have been made of that. It looks pretty cool. I've never been myself. Around here, no. Not that I know of, anyway. There are a few other guys who noodle around here, but I don't know of any festivals or tournaments or anything like that. Mostly this is, a few groups of people who get together and enjoy this during the summer and have a big time.
Have you ever skinned a squirrel?
Yeah, I've skinned a few squirrels. I'm pretty good at that, actually.
How fast are you at it?
I can skin one in less than a minute.
Wow. Now, what are you doing with the rest
now,
of the
I
squirrels?
Now, I can crush one in a second.
Right,
in my car.
Exactly, but but what? Like, why are you skinning the squirrel? Is it for the pelt, or are you like going to use the meat?
Oh, it's to eat them, for sure. They're delicious.
Okay.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, they're really good.
But it tastes like chicken?
No, they taste like squirrel.
Gotcha. a nutty flavor?
You know, actually, that's not a bad way to put it. Depending on what a squirrel is eating on at a given time of year, they do have, my favorite time to squirrel hunt is in September, and they're cutting on hickory and beech nuts, and they do kind of have a nutty flavor, but they're... I wouldn't go so far as to say they're a white meat, but they are a mild, like compared to venison, for example, they are a whiter meat than venison.
Right.
Sort of along the lines of pork. They're not, they're not as fatty, obviously, but they're a very, very mild flavored game meat, and I grew up eating them. They're really good.
Probably took a bunch of them to fill you up.
Oh,
how many do you have to eat to be full?
Oh, one squirrel has 4 legs and 2 tenderloins. I mean, that can, with a few
Let's not get crazy. Those front legs are
those are tiny, man.
I mean, they're twigs.
They were chicken wings that have more meat on them.
Well, they're still pretty good. They have a few bites on them. So, the limit is 6 per day around here. If I can get my 6, we have enough that, that our family of three can have a big dinner with leftovers. So.
The Wild Meat Company says that squirrel tastes like a subtler version of rabbit, with some saying the flavor resembles a cross between rabbit and chicken with a hint of nuts. The meat is sweet, light in color, and finely textured.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, I'd say that's a pretty good description. I like rabbit, but I like squirrel a little bit better.
How hard is squirrel to prepare? So you could skin it quickly,
and
then what do you do next?
I usually boil it in chicken broth. I boil the quarters in chicken broth for about an hour, then I cool them, and then I just bread them and fry them. That boiling kind of tenderizes them a little bit. Some of the older ones can be a little bit tough.
Right. So you're parboiling.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you want baby squirrels.
Yeah, you don't want them undercooked, otherwise you might get, some kind of disease, right?
I don't know about that. I'm not an expert in squirrel diseases, but, we always, cooking them like that, you definitely don't worry about undercooking them. As a rule, a lot of your wild game is best when it's served kind of rare, but squirrels, it's just a matter of practicality and getting them tender enough to eat. So, yeah, I usually, usually boil them in chicken broth and fry them, and, we eat them kind of like fried chicken. So.
Gotcha.
Well, Will, thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. We're going to link up to all things Will Brantley on WPLR.com. Thank you, brother.
Well, hey, I sure appreciate you guys having me.
Thank you.